This is Real Talk Radio on 99.3 ESPN, 99.3ESPN.com, and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Got any bites yet? I do.
Just like that, Lady Greta told me, down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty, gear in a tackle box, out on the flat rock. Baiting that hook with only the right look, lure in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide, papa's going out of sight. Even if it takes all night, ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner, cause I
good morning. This is Captain Debbie Hansen, and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. I am in the studio this morning with the chair dancing, toe tapping Captain Greg Stamper.
Yee-haw!
Oh my goodness!
What? What happened?
You think you're Craig from Sheeman?
I was going to say when well, he went all Craig Sheeman on you there.
Okay, now that everyone's awake. And poor Dave, I'm going to go over to line one, and he probably just blew his eardrums away. Let's grab Dave. He's standing by. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Was that a hee-haw I heard?
It was a yee-haw. Yeah, that was a Captain Greg yee-haw.
What's up?
He went in a minute, sir. I wasn't talking to you, Deb. It was the customer just came through the door. But anyway. I have to clarify a point. Now, a couple of weeks ago,
yep.
Steve was on remotely, and in the background, his cats were talking, making noises and everything. And last week, when Steve was in the
studio, yep.
At the station, okay, and you had made a comment to him before I got on about, you know, the cats weren't with him. The cats weren't talking in the background. And when I got on, the first thing I said was meow. And I had someone made a comment to me about Steve being on in person and that there was a cat, must have been a cat in the studio. And I just wanted to let everybody know that I'm the cat's meow.
I knew this was. I knew that was going somewhere.
you are the cat's meow, Dave. Yep. And I'm happy to hear that you had a full house up there last Saturday for Rob's book signing. That's good news.
Oh, cool.
It was like a madhouse when Rob got here, and you know, we were really glad to see him. He looked good. Obviously, he's taking care of himself, and the meds are taking care of him, too, I think. You know, but anyway, looks good, sounds good. Had a good turnout. The people that were here, I'd mentioned, I think, early on, that a lot of times on Saturday morning, it's relatively slow until about 10:30, and then at 10:30, people are in here until about 2-something in the afternoon. Last week, it's as soon as we opened the door, it started, and it, when Rob showed up early, about 10:30, there must have been 15 people packed in the little building, and our setup was to have him outside, and fortunately, just started off for him. I had a gentleman that was in from Idaho and wanted to know more about fishing in this area, so I kind of turned him over to Rob, and Rob started the day out, I guess, with talking to him about, you know, how to fish this area, which was really good. And the guy bought a book, so from that standpoint, I mean, he's off on the right foot, I think, in getting accustomed to fishing this area. You know, I asked him when he said something, what do I have to know about fishing this area? And I think my first comment to him was, what are the tides like in Idaho? And he said, we don't have tides in Idaho. I said, oh, there, lesson number one. Here's Rob. Yeah. It's been about tides, you know, so got him started there. But
unless you're out there today, then it might be similar to the tide in Idaho.
Yeah, no kidding.
But Dave, actually, we just got a text that came through for you. Good morning, Debbie, Greg, and Rick. Visited Lear's yesterday for the first time. Long story short, great people, great service, great old Florida tackle shop. Even a great lunch suggestion, the Althenian, a couple blocks south of Dave's shop. Great show from Quiet John.
I was gonna mention that the folks showed up. They're from Naples, and they had some things that needed to be repaired, and I think Dan took care of them, and he wanted to know a little bit about fishing the Caloosahatchee, and so I taught him a little bit about what I could tell him about. I thought he should do in starting to fish this river, and it's right when they were getting ready to leave, his wife said, "Well, is there a good place to eat?" And so I pointed them down to the Athenian, and the Athenian is probably, in my estimation, got the largest, most varied menu of any restaurant in Lee County. They almost anything you can ask for, they generally got it. They left, and about 45 minutes later, I got a phone call from them, and they said that they had this delicious meal down there. The vegetables were fresh. The grouper was outstanding, and the rice pudding was some of the best rice pudding that they'd ever had. And I agree with everything, excuse me, everything they said about the meal. But I said to, before you leave, when you go up to the cash register, look to the right. There's a refrigerator there, and you need to take a look at the cheesecake. So I don't know whether they got a slice to go or whether they stayed there and had a piece of cheesecake. But yeah, nice restaurant, nice people down there, and it's, if I have to say it, typical of the North Fort Myers hospitality.
Yeah, so just a little family-owned place, Dave, and seafood primarily?
No. It's an American Greek restaurant.
Got it.
And they've got a fairly extensive Greek menu, if you want Greek food. But everything else they have there is, practically speaking, anything that you'd find on any restaurant you want. Go into a steak restaurant, if you go there, they got several different kinds of steak. You want spaghetti, they got spaghetti. They want a burger, they get burgers. They get most anything that you want down there. I've been going there ever since they opened. I've probably been going there for 35, 40 years, maybe. It's changed from what it was in the early days. Initially, it was, believe it or not, it was a Burger Queen, and the people bought it and turned it into a sit-down type restaurant. And it was small, like a Burger Queen would be. And then the people that own it now enlarged it probably two and a half times what it was. And it's been like this probably for 25 to 30 years. But nice place, nice people, easy going. Good service, but anyway.
Good to know.
Good
to know for next time I get up to that neck of the woods. Yeah.
It'd be a place for you to stop. Anybody listening, for them to stop in there. Again, they're just good people. The food is good. We like it a lot. We eat breakfast there on Sundays mostly. Eat lunch there. I happen to like, and my wife happens to like, split pea soup. I think probably some of the best split pea soup that I've ever eaten. Consistently, they do two soups a day. Every day's got a different soup. So that's pretty extensive for a restaurant to do two soups a day. Most restaurants you go in, you're lucky if you get one.
Yeah.
In fact, carry soup. You know. But anyway.
Yeah. So, Dave, Greg and I were just talking this morning about getting into some snook fishing, and obviously, you know, a lot of the guys out there are starting to get into some tarpon now with the water temperatures warming up. So do you have any recommendations for folks who are coming in and looking to target snook on artificial? What baits and lures do you carry that you generally suggest to folks for spring fishing?
It actually really depends on where they're going to go. A lot of the young guys that come in here, they're up to fishing the lock, they're up to fishing the Edison Bridges, Midpoint Bridge, Sanibel Causeway, and of course, going into this time of the year, things are going to tend to gravitate down the river a little bit, with the exception of the lock area with the heavy water coming over there. But a lot of the guys are using flare hawk lures, which are
jigs.
A weighted head, and they come in varied colors, all different kinds of colors. I think probably depending upon water conditions, meaning the clarity of the water, the colors vary anywhere from chartreuse to a hot pink to even purple and black, or black and purple, either one. And I think early on, Alex had said something about king mackerel fishing, and one of the colors that he had talked about that they were using were purple Rapalas, and we carried the man stretch plugs in the black and purple as for king colors, but black and purple or purple and black is a really all around good color, and in fact, from the fly fishing aspect of it, probably the black and purple Puglisi colored looking flies are probably the our number one seller when it comes to a tarpon color pattern.
That's
so
tarpon all day.
And I don't know what I guess it's a shadowing kind of color that for sure isn't what I would consider to be bright. But it evidently shadows in the water extremely well, and the tarpon seem to go at it. I've caught really nice big trout on on that color on fly, and the fellows that are fishing under the bridges, they use it with this flare hawk type of a lure, which is going to be a bottom fishing type lure.
Well, I think, Dave, don't you think that with those dark colors, the black and purple, especially when you're fishing for bigger snook or tarpon, you're fishing those low light conditions, and those fish are basically looking up, they're seeing that dark profile.
You're right.
So
right.
That's got it. That black and you've got the purple, and they're able to see that as, you know, you got to think if you're a fish looking up towards the surface of the water and you've got moonlight shining down, you're going to see that dark profile.
See that? That's what you're seeing. You're seeing that shadowing profile. You know, they've always dark water, dark bait. Light water, light baits. But when it comes to, I would have to say, any other type of lures, particularly here in the river, DOA Terrorizer, have been a really pretty good bait up in and around, say, I-75 and the railroad trestle. Some of the DOA's shad baits and those in some really good colors like Arkansas Glow or Pearl have worked real well up in that area too.
That those Terrorize are awesome for juvenile tarpon.
Yeah, they really are.
If somebody hasn't used one of those, and snook and reds too, but I tell you, you know, when we get these juvenile tarpon up in Estero Bay and up in our rivers and stuff like that, they love those Terrorize. It's just that way that tail just wiggles, and the body stays flat. That thing is solid.
Yeah, that's another thing that I've got this friend of mine that uses the Terrorize also when he's triple tail fishing. Now, like everybody, when they go out on the markers, they think that the bait of choice that there's got to be something either looks like or simulates a shrimp pattern of some type, because I think that's all that those triple tail eat out there. But he uses the DOA Terrorize out triple tail fishing, and his part of his reason for that is, and you, Greg, you mentioned the tail wiggle. If people look at the Terrorize and they look at the tail, if you can kind of visualize it swimming down with the tail part being up, there's a slight V there, and he surmises that they think that they're small crabs. And you know, if you watch crabs swim, they got one claw generally folded in, and the other claw is kind of extended out as they kind of go down. And he, when you look at that Terrorize, you can almost see that as as being a crab trying to flee in the downward position, but he does extremely well on triple tail using that DOA terrorize.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
I've used those even for crappie. I was fishing the St. John's River with outdoor writer Ron Presley a few years back, and we caught a ton of crappie on a silver, just using the silver DOA terrorize.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty much a universal lure. I think Mark did it pretty good when he designed the lure. I think you catch everything on it. And there are a lot of baits like that that are real, real crossover baits. Everybody comes in wanting the snook lure, particularly topwater snook lure, and you can just as easily reach over and grab a head and torpedo or baby torpedo, or you can or a spook junior, and you can go bass fishing with it as well as you can go snook or trout or redfish fishing with it too. Most of the baits will cross over anytime. It's just kind of a shame the manufacturers label and push things in certain directions, you know, but just by name people will turn it down if it doesn't sound like something that they want to fish with.
the holographic eyes on that bait, and then it's got just the way that hook is positioned, the hookup ratio, I think, on those baits is so high just because of the way that hook is positioned.
I just
by the way, did you all hear about the great white that was caught off the beach up in the Panhandle?
Yeah.
No, I didn't hear about that. I heard about the tiger shark that was caught off Naples.
There's this guy. This must have been within the past week. He's an ex professional hockey player, and he specializes as a charter captain in beach fishing from shore. And so he's got these rigs. He fills his truck up with all kinds of really heavy tackle, and he had some charters. And the people were from Idaho. There was six or seven people in a family from Idaho that came down. He set them up on the beach, and he's got a kayak, and he kayaks his bait out, drops it, and comes back. And they get this runner on, and it was on YouTube. They fought the fish. Took them 40 minutes, and it's a great white. I don't know how big it was. I'm going to estimate it was probably 10 to 12 feet anyway. It looked really pretty big. And they got his head up in the surf part of the beach right in through there, and he got a cable cutter and cut either the hook or the cable off itself, and then kind of got in the water and grabbed him by the tail and pulled him back out to where he could swim away. But I'm sure there are a lot of people open their eyes really pretty big when they saw that there was a great white which was 100 yards or so off of the beach up near somewhere in and around the Destin area there. So
How many feet did they say it was? Dave?
How big was the shark? 10 to 12 feet.
Yeah, it was something like, I heard it was like 10 or 11 feet.
Yeah, well, I know we've talked about it on the show before, but if you go to the website, I think it's OSearch or OSearch, there's a shark tagging program that they have, and you can see exactly where the tagged great whites are across the state of Florida. There's a map, and you can see
where the pings are. The one they caught, I don't think, was tagged.
Yeah.
Several years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, Captain Kevin Holly was tarpon fishing off of Sanibel, but up towards Redfish Pass area. Mm-hmm. He was in like 37 feet of water, and he had one swim right next to his boat. And they videoed it. They took pictures of it. It just so happened it was on the west side of the boat, and it was the sun was to the west side. Oh. And so the only thing that showed up in the pictures was like his head and his tail. But he was almost as long as Kevin's boat, the way it appeared. But that was in 37 foot of water, and that was in the same time frame that the Kelly brothers were spearfishing offshore, and one swam by them while they were out shooting shooting grouper.
Yeah,
but, you know, I don't think that's the ideal situation to have. But anyway,
well, I'm sure some of those sharks follow the sea turtles in this time of year. Because the sea turtles are getting ready to come in to get ready to nest, I would imagine. And that's one of the primary food sources of those sharks. So I'd imagine that's part of it.
Tarpon is what
they're
those
tarpon
big
too.
Sharks, they're going to be following those tarpon schools. They're coming from the south.
I think that sea turtle like that, I mean, coming in contact with a great white like that is almost like Rick. Coming in contact with those candied nuts this morning.
Well, Dave, they are playing our tune.
Are they?
Take it easy, Dave.
Have a great weekend, Dave. Take care.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That is Mr. Dave Westshore with Lear's Economy Tackle. If they don't have it, you don't need it. We're going to get ready to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on 99.3 ESPN and on the 99.3 ESPN app. We'll be back after these messages.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Real Talk Radio on 99.3 ESPN, 99.3ESPN.com, and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Good morning. Good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my special guest co-host, Captain Greg Stamper of Snook Stamp Charters. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Captain Debbie Hansen of She Fishes 2.
See what I get when you come in the studio?
You get some PR. You got to give
attitude.
Yourself some love. Although you're pretty busy, so
I have been very busy. It's been a really good, this past week was really good on the freshwater side. Lots of peacock bass, lots of bass, yep. Lots of happy clients. So thank you everyone for your support, for coming out on the water with me. I've had a blast so far this season. And
have you got any?
Definitely going to continue because I'm already booked well into April. So,
are you seeing any of those little tarpon down there?
No,
no,
no, not in the areas where I'm fishing.
Okay,
no, but I know this summer, as we head into summer, late spring, summer, I'll probably see them in some of the canals and the creeks where I fish. So,
you'll get snook and tarpon up in some of those areas.
Yeah,
right.
Not really the area where I'm fishing right now, but yeah, like I said, towards this summer, like later in the spring, this summer, once we start getting some of those rains, then I'll be fishing a little closer to home here.
You'll be fishing
see some of those.
Some of the homelands around Jim's house.
Are you giving away spots here on air?
All right, I'll be quiet.
Yeah, good idea.
Hey, I fish in Estero Bay, just so you know, if everybody wants to know, that's where I'll be fishing.
Yeah, but there's a lot of nooks and crannies in Estero Bay.
Yes, there is.
Lots of creeks and rivers, lots of places
that
you really can't describe to people. You know, you just have your own private intel. All right, we're going to go over to line one. We're going to grab future Captain Bradley Finch standing by on line one. Hey, Bradley, good morning.
Good morning, Captain Debbie.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing really good here in the studio this morning, and we are looking at all these awesome pictures of you and your dad out there catching snook and redfish and jack. So fill us in. Give us the report from this week.
So this past week I was on spring break, and we went fishing a lot. So first things first, we caught some snook and snapper. I took my friend Sierra.
Yeah.
Fishing, and we caught a 26-inch red.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That's what she got. And then last night I did some night fishing.
Yep, with your dad.
And yes.
Hitting those lights.
Many, What?
You were hitting the snook lights?
No, there wasn't any on there.
No?
On the docks we were fishing. Hmm. But there were so many snook.
Yeah, what were you guys using?
I was using a jig head with a root beer and green tail.
Got it.
Colored DOA.
All right.
And then my dad was using a white, like, fluke-looking thing.
Yeah, that'll work.
Well, great. It looks like you guys had plenty of luck when you were out there. What were you using for the redfish? Same thing?
You're using a jig head and shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what caught most of them on, is shrimp, too.
Yeah.
And when we were fishing
over
there...
Nice work.
I'm so happy to see that there's more trout in Estero Bay.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I've been catching so many trout lately.
Yep.
Yeah. It's really, really good news for Estero Bay. We've never been so happy to see all those trout. Definitely. What size range do you know, Bradley? The fish you were getting?
For like every fish that I caught.
Just for the trout, do you remember what size the trout were,
like,
on average?
I never measured it, but
yeah,
the one I caught was like probably like 17 or 18. My mom caught like a 20-inch one.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, you'll see them up to about 22, maybe 23 inches now. That's about as big as I've seen so far.
Yep.
Yes.
Were you fishing around some turtle grass, or were you fishing what types of areas?
Docks.
Docks.
Trout.
Yep.
There you go. What about bass fishing? Did you get out on the freshwater side a little bit this past week or no?
No, we didn't get out there.
Maybe this week. Maybe today would
be
a really good
day. Today is a good day for that.
I just looked outside my window. It's like actually really nice.
Yeah. Well, awesome stuff, Bradley. Thanks for the report, and thanks to Mom and Dad for sending in the great photos. We really appreciate it. Try to get those posted on the Facebook page.
Yes, one more thing.
What's that?
Tuesday was my birthday.
Tuesday was your birthday! Happy belated birthday, future Captain Finch.
Yeah, getting close.
Did you get any fishing gear for your birthday?
Yeah, I got a buff and some, like, live target shrimp.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Nice.
Those live target shrimp are fantastic. They look so realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a buff is always going to come in handy, especially as we roll into the summer months and you need something to really keep that warm sun off your face, right?
Yes, it's the Florida fishing flag thing.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Awesome. Well, good deal. I hope you had a great birthday, and clearly you've been out there fishing, so I'm sure, obviously, you had a good week and caught plenty of fish.
Yes.
How convenient is it that your birthday falls on your spring break?
Right.
I know, right?
I mean, like, that's hooked up right there.
Exactly. It totally is. You don't have to spend it in school. You can spend it out on the water, the place where you love to be.
Yes.
Good deal. Well, Bradley, you have a great Saturday. Say hi to Mom and Dad, and we'll catch up with you next weekend.
Okay.
All right.
Have a great
day. Take care. Happy birthday.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.
That is future Captain Bradley Finch calling in. That's so funny. So Mad Duck in Naples wants to know, when does FCB, future Captain Bradley, get some co-hosting time with you, Captain Deb, on how to fish with family and involving his friends with fishing? That's a great idea, Mad Duck. We'll have to consider that, definitely. And then, let's see, Dopey McDoperson says, anyone ever catch an octopus? What do you do with it? Food? Hockey game?
I would eat it.
Yeah, I would definitely, too. Grilled octopus is good. Yeah. I don't care.
The thing is you gotta get him in that cooler and don't open that cooler.
Right.
Because if you've ever put an octopus in something, he can get through any hole. He can get through a hole the size of a pea.
Yeah. You've made grilled octopus before.
Oh, yeah.
You got to tenderize it.
There's different ways of doing it. There's different ways of cooking it. You can slow boil it to start it. Then you can grill it from there. You can slice it thin. You can tenderize it with a meat tenderizer. You can throw it on the grill. There's lots of different ways of doing it.
Is that what we call calamari, Greg, or
no,
is that different?
Calamari is a squid.
A squid. Okay.
This is actual octopus. I mean, I make sushi. I make octopus salad. We've had octopus.
So you have caught octopi before?
Yeah.
Octopi.
Yeah.
Really?
You know, every once in a while, you'll hear the stone crabbers complain that the octopus are getting real bad and they're eating their crabs in the traps. So they're out there. They're not as easy to hook. So a lot of times you may actually have one, or you may feel one pulling on your bait on the bottom if you're bottom fishing, but he doesn't actually get to hook in him, so he lets go before he comes up. But every once in a while, somebody will reel one in.
And what you say about they're like notorious escape artists, right? Because I've heard stories of like aquariums.
Incredible. Yeah.
Keeping them in like sealed aquariums, and somehow they find a way out.
And they're incredible. Like two rooms down from where the aquarium actually was.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rick, I have to say, I'm very impressed by your knowledge of the plural. Octopus.
Thank you.
Octopi. Yeah. And look, and then we get a text here from Gator Tom. It looks like he's on a computer from 1980.
Well, actually.
Just saying.
Hospital.
Yeah, I think he's in a hospital.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think that's a hospital
Gator
monitor.
Tom. He said, kind of tied up. Don't worry. We'll try to keep up with the help of my nurse, Olga, signing off from Swampville General. Gator Tom.
Uh-oh. Get better. Get better.
Oh, no. Get better soon. Hope you're okay.
But I thought the same thing. I saw the picture and I went, what the hell is that?
I had to enlarge it. And then I could see that.
Come on, Tom.
Yeah, the heart rate on there. Oh, yes. Gator Tom. Man, thoughts are with you.
Get better, buddy.
Get better.
We need donuts.
Yeah. So, Greg, I know we had just started talking about fishing for snook and the types of areas where you're looking for them, the sandy bottoms and those transition areas where you've got those deeper troughs off of the mangroves. Fill us in. We started talking a little bit about the type of leader. You said you're basically using 30-pound fluorocarbon up to 40-pound. 30-pound is the minimum.
Well, we're talking about now you want to land a nice fish, right?
You're
in an area where you're seeing fish that are over that 30-inch mark on a regular basis, okay? And you will see areas that are just loaded up with some big fat snook. They'll just be laying up there close to the shore or sometimes off the shore by several feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, whatever. I recommend 30-pound minimum for those fish. Now, if you start seeing really giant fish, you can go up to 40, but the problem with going the heavier is it becomes more visible. They can start seeing it.
Yeah.
So if there's really three types of snook fishing that we do in our area. One of them is the beach fishing. Okay. There is no structure. So you're going to get away with 25 at least, but definitely 30, no problem at all. Okay.
And that's basically spring, late spring through fall.
That'll start up in about it gets good in another, for me, in a couple months.
Yeah.
That's when I can slow roll the beaches. There's lots of white bait flashing around. You'll see the big girl, the big female being followed by all the boyfriends, you know, and they'll be getting ready for their spawn in July, you know, right around that full moon. So that's when they get up real tight on the beaches in our passes, and they go through more than one spawn. Last year, they think they spawned a few times. I do remember seeing a more than once, probably twice last year, where I saw the big schools of snook packed up in our passes. So that was probably one or two spawns during that time frame. So you have the beach fishing. That's like 30-pound leader. That's usually what I use. You have the nearshore wrecks and reef snook fishing, which is another type of snook fishing we have. And so any of our wrecks, our reefs, our barges out there, and some of the natural structure, but mostly it's the wrecks. There's going to be snook around them on one side or the other. Today's technology with side scan really enables individuals to see where fish are sitting or laying near structure. They're not necessarily on the wreck. They're near it. So in that situation there, and those big
flare hawks
that he was just talking about, they'll you can slow swim those down there, and sometimes those will work. But that for me is your standard, almost like a chicken rig with a nice size weight on it. It could be, depending on how strong the current is, a 1/2 ounce would probably help you be enough. Put my big thread fin down there next to them and just wait for them. If you see them on your side scan, you're going to know which side of the wreck they're laying on. And those fish tend to be big. So you could realistically catch a 40-incher down there automatically, but that's going to be a mostly large snook. You're not going to catch any 25-inchers out there on the wrecks and the reefs. These are all going to be fish that are upper slot, definitely over slot.
Well, then you got the bridges and the passes.
Same
and
thing. That's just like the structure.
That's where a lot of those guys are using those flare hawks.
That's just like the same thing. You're fishing structure based in deeper water. Like, you know, we used to fish the old C-span and the A-span and the B-span bridges, or up in the Cape Coral bridges and those type of places. That's deep water.
Yep.
You know, you're in 10, 12, 18 feet in some of those spots. And then, of course, you have the transition, like what we do in the Coosahatchee River and Matlache Pine Island, where you're fishing mangrove shorelines. But again, I like to see those areas where you might have, you know, a huge flat where it drops right by deeper water or a deeper cut. That's going to be more of a slow roll targeting or pulling your boat in through those areas. And you can use a variety of different things, but I'm still going to be using at least 30-pound leader.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. So we'll get even into a little bit more on snook when we come back. We got to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on 99.3 ESPN and on the 99.3 ESPN app. We'll be back after these messages.
This is Real Talk Radio on 99.3 ESPN, 99.3ESPN.com, and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my special guest co-host, Captain Greg Stamper of Snook Stamp Charters. Good morning, Captain Greg.
Good morning. Good morning, Southwest Florida. Good to be here.
Good to have you. How's it going over there in the co-host chair?
It's going good. It's cold in here.
It is a little chilly in here this morning, right?
Yeah.
AC definitely is cranking in the studio.
No doubt.
For sure. Phone lines are open. Go ahead, give us a call. Send us a text, 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776. So, Greg, I know we were just talking a little bit about, actually, we were talking a lot about snook and some of the areas you can target them, type of tackle you should be using, weight of leader you should be using.
Yeah.
You were saying bridges. You were saying the offshore wrecks and reefs for some of those really big snook.
Yeah, that's all good advice.
Up against the mangroves. Yes.
Yeah, the mangrove stuff, you know, when you get in the back, you know, a lot of people do it a lot of different ways. You can, you know, a lot of people fly fish for them. A lot of people throw artificials. Obviously, when you're guiding somebody and maybe they're not as experienced in being able to cast and being accurate.
Yeah.
Live baiting it is a much easier way. You know, we get a lot of pilchards on our beaches. We've had them for a long time now, throughout the winter, which is fantastic. If you can throw a cast net, you can get yourself a couple hundred of those, throw them in your live well. Sometimes you can just, cruise down some shorelines, just throw some free chummers out there. And, all of a sudden, you know, if you just listen or pay attention, you'll see, snook just blowing them up, and you kind of know where they are, and then you can pitch a bait in there and catch them and have fun. That's, you know, the ins and outs of that. And of course, while you're snook fishing, there's other things around like the redfish and stuff too. So you'll have options. I mean, some of the places you go, you see sawfish and little baby Goliath groupers and stuff like that. So,
well, some of the best times I know we've had before you and I jumped into the world of chartering and being full-time guides was topwater artificial fishing for those snook, which is just an absolute blast, seeing them explode on those skitter walks. Those bone colored skitter walks are probably some of my favorite, at least when you're fishing in the day and you've got the
big snook hitting at topwater is always just
a
awesome.
Huge explosion. It's so awesome.
Yep. That's the ins and outs of that. And of course, then, you know, there's also bycatch. You know, you catch a lot of trout, jacks, you know, when you're doing that. If a jack eats a big threadfin herring that's, you know, 7-8 inches long, it's going to be a giant jack. So, you know, sometimes you'll get those 15-20 pound jack revolves. You know, and some giant redfish and stuff. It kind of keeps, I like to use those big baits if I'm trying to target big snook, because it really limits, you don't catch the small ones.
Right.
You know, if I throw a pilchard that's only a couple inches long, that brings everything into play.
Yeah.
So if I'm truly just trying to get somebody their trophy, you know, like I used to do up in the Coosahatchee River a lot, I would take redfin herring in there, go out to the bridges, net them, and then bring them in there and see if we can't catch him a stud. You know, everybody wants to be part of that 40-inch club. That's like the big deal.
Yes, they do. But are there any specific type of conditions that you're really wanting to see when you're looking for those bigger fish?
Well, I like having clean water, okay? Because I'm really, for me, it's more about scouting them out and knowing where they're going to be sitting.
Right.
There's once you've been all out there on those areas long enough, you kind of know, like, where they'll be. Mm-hmm. You start to understand their patterns and where they like to sit, you know, based on the incoming or the outgoing tides. And you start patterning your fishing around those. Moving water is always very important.
Ambush points, given the fact that they're ambush predators. So.
Sure. The moving water is a big deal to me, even though, you know, you could still get them when that water is not moving much. You know, if they're hungry and you throw a nice live bait in there, they're probably going to pick it up. I mean, I've seen them eat dead. I remember watching a big old giant snook eat a dead threadfin you had out there one time. I couldn't believe he picked it up, like, but he was hungry, so he wanted to eat it. But, you know, the live bait thing obviously is the easiest way to go. And then the second easiest way is the artificials. And then the hardest way to get a really big snook is on the fly. That's the biggest challenge of all of them.
So. Yeah, definitely. That's a goal of mine, though, for sure. And I know, you know, we've talked on the show a bit before about the importance of just when you roll up into an area or into a particular spot, just really paying close attention to what's going on before you even make that first cast. And I know a lot of times when you and I have been out there, it's really listening for those pops back in the mangroves that are going to tell you, hey, those fish are around. They're feeding on those baits way back into the mangroves, at least when you're doing that particular type of fishing, obviously.
Oh, well, there's tons. I don't know. I'd just be honest with the snook fishing for me. When you fish in areas a lot, you start to get used to seeing what's there, like if there's a log there or things that look like fish. And you can, the more you fish in an area, the more you go, that wasn't there before. And then you realize that's a big fish that's laying it up or just...
It's not a log.
Right. So some of that is visual, and then some of that is just your knowledge. Like there's areas that I will fish for snook that I just know they're going to be in there.
Right.
So I don't even try and get close to it. I'm basically trying to stay as far away from the spot as I can and allowing, whether it's a free-lined bait or allowing the lure just to barely reach and just barely creep up a little closer each time. You know, and if you want to chum them up and throw it in there and see if they're going off, then you can do that. But for the most part, it's about paying attention on the water. Most of the snook fishing I do is either going to be on the beach or in very, very shallow water, you know, a foot or two at the most.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I do fish for them in our passes. I do some of the stuff on the wrecks from time to time, and I do some of the stuff around the docks and stuff. Those are obvious places where they're going to be, especially at nighttime with good current. But, you know, those big ones that are in the backs of the Coosahatchee River and some of these canals and up some of our rivers and stuff, those are the challenging fish to go after.
Yeah. And I know snook is, that's your prime favorite species to target, but a lot of your experience when you started fishing was on the East Coast of the state.
A lot of bonefish.
When you were growing up. So you didn't have a lot of snook fishing in the area where you were. I mean, there were
we had good snook fishing. I mean, as kids, one of the most favorite times I can still remember to this day, in fact, in July when I go to the Keys, I'll go do it again, is fishing the old Channel 5 bridge at nighttime, just throwing free lines, either artificial shrimp or crabs or whatever, and just wrecking snook and tarpon all night long. That's always a blast down there. But we had a lot of snook in South Florida when I grew up in Miami, but I was primarily fishing a lot for bonefish and permit and the tarpon back then. And then the snook became like the new go-to because we could do it on the flats and we could wade and we could flats fish for them that way.
Hey, we got to go to break in like just a minute or two, but I want to get this guy on real quick. His name is Keith, and he had a question about snook fishing that I thought maybe Greg could answer real quick before we go to break.
Yeah, let's grab Keith's call. Yeah. Here we go. Hey, Keith, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I grew up in North Fort Myers in the 60s and 70s on the river.
Yep.
And we used to catch between 10 and 15 snook any night we wanted.
Yep.
And quite a few of them we used to catch in the Orange River up by the old marina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still pilings there, but the marina's been torn down for many years.
Yep.
Do you know if there's still snook around them pilings or not?
There's absolutely snook up in the Orange River. Even on the beautiful island, if you remember where that was, that dock's gone now. The trussels, there's a ton of snook still up in those neck of the woods. Absolutely there's snook up there, no doubt.
The biggest snook we ever caught was in the mouth of the Orange River, 32 pounds.
Jeez, that's a huge snook.
Wow.
That had to be a spawning fish. That's huge. That's like that's almost 50 inches.
Yeah, I think it was 48.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So. Fish of a lifetime.
Man. Well, you know, things have changed. It's not as good as it used to be, but they're still there. I can promise you there's still fish around Beautiful Island, up into the Orange River and all those pilings. And you can continue to go up it. Yeah.
Thanks for the information.
Thanks for calling in, Keith. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
All
Take
right,
care. Bye. All right, we got to get ready to head off to a break. You are listening to Real Talk on 99.3 ESPN and on the 99.3 ESPN app. We'll be back after these messages.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.